Well, hello, hello, hello. Sometimes I throw a little bonus plan at you guys. I talked to Mike Renner today. Tomorrow's going to be Twitter Thursday, as usual. But I just saw a golden opportunity to bring on a friend of mine, John Ledyard. If you don't know who John is, he is the host of Locked On Steelers. And yes, this is going to be a very Steelers-centric podcast. Get used to it. You'll be all right. But John also is one of the hosts of Locked On NFL Draft. And it's basically officially draft season. You know, like, there's only two games to concentrate on at this point. So I am starting to rev up my draft prep. I know 1/100th of what John knows. And I urge you to check out his draft. He's going to the Senior Bowl next week. We're going to talk Steelers. We're going to talk Senior Bowl for the next 20 minutes or half hour. So what is up, brother?
Hey, Matt, great to be on with you, man. It's like a little throwback episode from when we used to do our old pod together. And, yeah, this is going to be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't even remember, John and I did a Breaking the Plane podcast a while back for a while. It was great content. It just didn't really get off its feet. And we both ended up on the Locked On Network. And I think I kind of hooked you up here or recommended you or, you know, to David. And it's been great. And for those of you that aren't listening to Locked On Steelers, and especially Locked On NFL Draft, if you're, you know, for a fan of any team, you got to do that immediately. So let's talk Steelers-Jags.
Oh, man. Do we have to?
I've done it ad nauseum. And I've done so much SNR lately that I don't want it to get a lot. But I do want to hear your impressions. And this could be a 3-hour conversation. But
yeah, it can be. It's I think it's one of them. I really, and this is, people thought that I was reacting strongly, but they must not listen to Locked On Steelers, because I said the week before, this is, if they lose, it's one of the worst losses in franchise history because of a myriad of things. It's not just because of one game. It's because look at the AFC this season. Look at how winnable it was. Look at how they played against the Patriots without Antonio Brown for most of the game. I mean, they should have won that game. They did win that game, if not for the weird NFL rules. The Steelers were going to win that game. And so, you know, they're the most talented team in the AFC. I don't care. Like, the Patriots defense is not played well all season long. It's been an issue. Yes, they had, I mean, they also played the AFC. So the Patriots didn't have that tough of an issue either getting through it. And maybe the Steelers lose to the Patriots in the AFC championship game. I'm not saying they go out and crush them in the AFC championship game or anything like that. Steelers defense had legit issues, and the Patriots would have scored points, no question. But the Steelers at full strength with Antonio Brown and all of the weapons that they have in the offensive line playing against the Patriots team that can't get a pass rush and corners that had struggled to cover all season long. I just feel like this was a year for Pittsburgh, man. And not that the window's closed, it isn't, but all the pieces were in place. This was a unit playing very well. Other than Shazier, no major injuries. That has been a while since that happened. And they went out and laid an egg. And they still scored 42 points. So this tells you about the talent of this team. They scored 4 touchdowns just throwing the ball up and letting playmakers go under it. And 2 of them were on 4th down, I think. So this team has insane amounts of talent. And this game was a microcosm in some ways of who the Steelers are, capable of splashy, crazy yardage production, crazy plays at certain points, unbelievable offensive flashes. I mean, if you just took the offense in this game and showed it to anybody, you'd be like, that's the best team in the league. But then there were the 4th down play calls, and then there's the interception in your own territory, and there's the running wide on a team that has been great against the run outside in the perimeter all season long, and things like that add up. And the scoop and score was kind of an unlucky play. Ben's got to get rid of the ball, but it bounced out to the flat right where the fastest linebacker in the league can pick it up and run it into the end zone. So that those things happen sometimes in those games. But there was a lot the Steelers could control in this game that they didn't control, and it came back to bite them in the end. And I think it largely reflected back on coaching.
Yes, very much so. And like, I thought Ben was spectacular for 90% of things. Right. Yep. You know, but both the turnovers were on him and well-deserved, and they made you pay for it. You know, the offense in general was outstanding, and we'll talk offensive coaching here in a minute. There's big news today, but to run wide, like you said, on those 4th down and challenge their speed, or to be an empty as much as they were, it was almost like, especially the opening drive. It felt like to me on the opening drive, they're an empty the whole time, that Haley and Ben and Tomlin said, yeah, we know we weren't supposed to throw on you all that amount last time, and it paid us, but we're the Steelers, and we're going to play Pittsburgh football, and we're going to do it anyway. And it's just massive hubris to me, yep. And instead of playing smart football.
Yep, that's what it was. I mean, I think if there's a drawback from Haley as an offensive coordinator, now obviously the news today that he won't be back as Steelers offensive coordinator is big news just across the whole NFL, because it's going to have repercussions with wherever he ends up, because he is a great offensive mind. What he isn't, he's not able to kind of divorce himself from what he loves to do when other teams match up well with it. You got to be able to adapt and attack other teams' weaknesses. And I don't think there is an arrogance to Todd Haley as a play caller. And I don't say that as like name calling so much as it is. It's sometimes it's great because they're aggressive in certain situations and it works out really well. And other times it's foolish because you can't do, why would you do certain things that are not necessarily your biggest strength or maybe a team matches up well with when you have so many options available to you as an offense? I don't feel like he always puts all those options to good use. When he does, honestly, you could make the case Haley's the best OC in the league, but he never did that consistently in Pittsburgh. I think he did a ton of great things in Pittsburgh. I thought he never did that consistently in key game situations and things like that. He was too stubborn at times, didn't adapt to what other teams were doing, didn't adapt from his plan A to a new plan B. And I think that it bit him in the butt in the end. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons, along with, I'm sure there was something with his relationship with Ben Roethlisberger. We've seen that go up and down and all over the place, and subtle shots from Ben. But then Ben comes back the other day and he says he doesn't want anything to change and he wants all the coaches back. And so you never know what exactly you're getting there. But I think that's one of the biggest things with Todd Haley, is his situational game planning, game calling, play calling. We're never going to get better with him. This was just who he was. And I think that at this game, more than any other, you just kind of realize this is who Todd Haley is, and it's not going to change.
Yeah, and you see some themes, you know, and with the organization and with Haley in a nutshell, you know, like, I think he prepares his team well. I think he game plans well. I think he gets the ball in Bell and Brown's hands, and the offensive numbers have been great, and I think these have been Ben's best years. And
right.
I don't know this for a fact, but I know this, that the Rooneys wanted Arians out because Ben was taking such a beating in that system. They didn't want to see their star quarterback get his head beat in, and they wanted to extend his career. Ben gets hit less than anyone in the league. You know, people overlook that fact, you know, that he's not shrugging off Terrell Suggs 10 plays a game anymore. He doesn't get hit anymore compared to the rest of the league.
Oh, but yeah. I mean, has Ben taken one big shot this year? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, right. I don't, maybe not.
I mean, somebody maybe falling on one of his ankles or something, but that, you know, no big shots, I don't think.
Blot, you know, blaster, you know, like quarterbacks do. But, and I think Tomlin's like this. I think LeBeau was like this. And I kind of mentioned it before that it's almost like we're the Steelers. We're going to do our thing. We're not going to adapt to our opponent. And we're so good, we'll win. And that works up until a point. I mean, that's a 12-win organization because Kevin Colbert's phenomenal at his job. But I also think that, you know, that you have to adapt, that Tomlin and Haley were better during the week than they are on game day.
Oh, yeah. I think that's exactly right most of the time. Now, there are certain situations where, and here's the thing, the Steelers have so much talent that, and that Todd Haley did maximize a good amount of the time, like in terms of individual production. But like, he made the most of what Le'Veon Bell can do, splitting him out wide as a receiver, playing him in the slot, using him on all kinds of complicated screens. Now, those screens weren't always well executed, but last year they were a lot better executed. I don't know what really happened, but this year they weren't as well executed. But the design and the idea behind a lot of them were, I loved some of the screenplays that the Steelers had. They just found there were so many ways to get him the ball, so many ways to get Antonio Brown the ball. Stacked releases, they could do it on screens in the past. This year, again, I thought that went downhill with him on wide receiver screens. But, I mean, you had lots of crossing patterns and man beaters if, for whatever reason, there was a tough matchup for him in man. You had plenty of zone beaters. So there was just so many different things and ways that the Steelers got Antonio Brown the ball and got Le'Veon Bell the ball that were great about Todd Haley's offense. The problem was overthinking things in critical situations more schematically than it was in terms of player usage. So there are definitely great things about Todd Haley, but you're right. I think in the moment in games, you know, we go back to the New England game in the regular season that forced the Steelers to get the 2 seed and not the 1 seed and play Jacksonville. And it's whatever. You have to beat who's ever in your path, but it all plays a part in it. And how are there not two plays called, you know, in that situation at the end of the game? Right. You got to have two plays. You have a 5-minute review of that Jesse James touchdown. You got to be ready with two plays. And again, it's Todd Haley's way of thinking. It's his way of saying, okay, here's what will happen. We'll throw an incompletion or we'll get a touchdown on the play. What happens if you throw the ball in bounds and it gets caught? You know, you got to be ready for all scenarios. Todd Haley's only thinking in his line of thinking. He's not thinking about all the possibilities, I think. And that's what it was a lot of time. It was kind of this arrogance is we're going to call this play. It's going to work. And that's it. Rather than we need to be ready. If it doesn't work, what's our plan B? And that's where I feel like he just failed a lot of the time.
Yeah, situational football is not a strength of this organization. I think it's safe to say. And
it's not. Right.
And I used to excuse Tomlin, but you know, because when he was hired, he had never been a head coach at any level. He wasn't a high school head coach. He had never done those things.
Sure.
So I, you know, I'd be on the air saying, well, how can you expect him to be a great time management guy or clock management guy or when the, you know, when the onside kick, got, you know, came into play, obviously. But he hasn't gotten any better, you know, and I don't think his assistants are great at it either. My biggest complaint with Haley, and I do think he's a very good coordinator. It doesn't sound like it, but I do think he is.
Right.
Has been, and it was really showed up on Sunday, 3rd and shorts. 4th and shorts, near the goal line. Don't be cute there, you know.
Right.
And I think the quarterback has something to do with it. He comes to the line of scrimmage. He sees AB one-on-one. He checks out of whatever Haley says and didn't care. You know, I mean, those things happen all the time.
Right.
But a quarterback sneak here and there. Get Nicks in an extra offensive lineman and just take the cheap yardage. I mean, Brady does it so well that there's too often that they're cute in critical situations.
Yep. Oh, completely agree. It's been an issue for years. How many times have we seen him thrown deep on 3rd and short? And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm very much like you. I'm very much get the yardage that's out there. But again, it was always this arrogance with the Steelers. And I don't say arrogance in like a totally a negative way.
No.
I just think that it comes back to bite you at times. There was this arrogance that if we don't get it on this drive, doesn't matter. We'll get it on the next drive. We're that good as an offense. And that's fine to a degree of time. You like that, but at certain points when you face other teams that are ready for you and that are frankly more physical than you in this game and that are very well prepared, those are the kind of decisions and things that you do that can come back to really hurt you. And that's exactly what happened in this game. Jacksonville was almost flawless in their approach and in their game plan, you know, and the Steelers worked, and that was the difference.
It was. And let's go to the other side of the ball, which I think was one of the most embarrassing, pathetic performances I've ever seen in a big game by any team, and let alone, you know, our hometown. And I don't know if you feel the same way or not.
Yes.
But, well, if there was a coaching change to be made, it seemed like that side of the ball was a lot more deserving. And I understand the Shazier thing, but, man, there are so many communication problems and coverage breakdowns and people not getting better.
It's exactly what you said. People not getting better. That's the biggest thing to me, because you're at the end of the season. And he hasn't improved at all. I mean, you're at the end of the season and you're having the same coverage breakdowns that you had earlier on in the season. You're at the end of the season and you're not communicating. There's no flat defender all the time. I mean, I wrote my entire all 22 review of the tape solely off defensive mistakes in the game. That was the entire thing. It was like a page and a half, and I didn't even get through every play, to be honest. But I mean, okay, so it begins with
Where's
Vince
that
Williams
at, by
and
the
Sean
way,
Spence.
I'm sure people want to read it.
That's on SteelCityInsiderScout.com. It's a subscription site. I don't think it's very expensive or anything, but it's a subscription site. But Jim Wexel and I do a lot of really cool stuff over there, and I talk about the all 22 from every game after the game ends and things that go wrong. And the first drive of the game was everything that was wrong.
Oh man.
You know, I mean, Sean Spence bit on a play action on the second play of the line of scrimmage from Jackson. Sean Spence was atrocious in this game, but I get he's in a tough situation. You know, he's coming off the street. He's playing. And
he should never be on the
ready.
Field, but he isn't good.
they should have played LJ Fort and just stuck with somebody who had been out, at least played long. And Fort looked good when he was in. I mean, it was situational stuff, but Spence bites on a play action and completely gets drawn up by the boot. I mean, he's literally in Vince Williams' gap. And their Blake Bortles is booting out the other side and throwing to his coverage assignment in the flat, and then you're off and running. And you've got – so 40 yards on Jacksonville's first drive was on two plays to backup tight ends that had, literally 20 yards of space in front of them before anybody even touched them. I mean, that's – That's how badly they were blowing coverages. To start the game, Jacksonville goes play action off a split zone with a boot, and the tight end coming across open into the flat. They do it basically every game. I don't know if there's a game Jacksonville didn't do it in. How are you totally unprepared for it? You know, that's the stuff that drives me nuts. And then let's go back to the Patriots game for an example. Okay, so the Patriots run a fake end around. So it's a play action type deal with a one-man route down the field. Max protect with everybody else, and you fake the end around. Brandon Cooks is the only receiver. Steelers in cover three. Brandon Cooks runs a post corner. If he runs the post, Mike Mitchell has him because he's in the middle of the field. If he runs the corner, Artie Burns has him. Artie Burns is standing in the flat. Just looking into the backfield. Cooks runs the post. Mitchell is playing the post. Breaks to the corner. Mitchell doesn't have that kind of athleticism, and you know, you could argue they can upgrade there, but it's not his assignment. It's Brandon Cooks running into Artie Burns' zone. So you think Artie Burns, young player, right? Browns game, week 17. The Browns run a fake end around the other side of the field. Josh Gordon runs a post corner because the Steelers just saw the Patriots beat the Steelers with the same route concept. Gordon goes to the post. Mike Mitchell has him back to the corner. That's where Joe Hayden should be. Joe Hayden, he wasn't as suckered as Artie Burns was, but he's not deep on the post pattern, on the corner route. So you have nobody in that deep cover third. It's a great throw. It's a great catch. They end up with a first and goal, like the 1 yard line. So again, you aren't learning from your mistakes and communicating your mistakes. It's not often you see the exact same concept beat a team, but that's what it was. A one man vertical route, one man going out into a route against cover three should never, ever happen. Should you have a play down the field? And that's what happened twice against the Steelers. And it's that kind of thing that happened all season long with this defense. They didn't communicate. They didn't talk. And how many players said in the locker room afterward? They said communication was just bad. I get that it gets worse after Shazier goes down.
Sure.
That is somewhat of an indictment on Vince Williams. I'll be honest. And I thought Vince Williams was very up and down this season. I know people love him and he's a fan favorite, and I love him too. But he, you know, you cannot
not that many snaps.
You can do better. Yeah, I like him in a lesser role.
Right.
You can do better than Vince Williams. And he and Sean Spence were both weaknesses in this game. Spence way more so. But and I wouldn't say anybody in the front really played well, other than maybe T.J. Watt. But you know, it wasn't a great game for anybody for sure. But and I don't think Hargrave was 100% because L.T. Walton played a good bit, or at least. Mm-hmm. Bit more than I would have liked to see him play. I like Walton, but either way, you know, yes, there were issues with players here and there for sure in the game, no question. But the scheme it's not giving him a chance to succeed because players didn't know what they were doing, and it was an issue all game long.
And Shazier's loss is gigantic. He has elite speed, and he makes up for problems, and he's a great player. And all of us that did any preseason work for the Steelers said the guy that they can afford to lose least, maybe more than anyone but Ben, was Shazier, just because the people behind him. And he also, kind of like you alluded to, he had the green dot in his helmet, so that was huge, too. I mean, you lose the guy, the communicator.
Mm-hmm.
But, you kind of mentioned this, too, like, there's defenders not covering the flats.
And
that's all they do. And, like, right. I've been telling my buddies and on the air saying, Jacksonville deserves a lot of credit. They came in here and they played their best game, basically.
Sure.
And even on defense, they played better than the points allowed. The Steelers just made really good plays against tight coverage and whatnot. But mm-hmm. I also think the Jags are maybe the easiest team to prepare for in the entire league. Both
They're
sides
pretty
of the ball.
Easy.
Right. I mean, were you shocked that they came out in 22 personnel and ran Fournette behind a fullback against double teams and then had play action, slow developing bootlegs to slow tight ends? You know, like, that's all they
do. Right.
They hide their quarterback. Like, to be shocked and blown away by that is unbelievable.
Yeah. Jacksonville came out with a game plan that literally said, we're going to score 13, 16 points, and we're going to beat you. And then they scored 45 because that's how simple their game plan was. What they threw down the field one time, and it was a hanging in the air YOLO ball that Artie Burns should have made a play on, and he didn't. And that's, again, goes back to Burns and the limitations and concerns there. But I think that's the big thing. Like, I don't know that the defense could have possibly made things any easier for Blake Bortles or for Leonard Fournette. I mean, they just made it so easy. There's a play in the game where, and I'm trying to find what I wrote about it. There was 8 gaps to defend up front, and the Steelers have Sean Davis not in the box. He's like hovering outside the box about 7 to 8 yards deep rather than 4 or 5 where the linebackers typically are. And you don't think, oh, those couple yards don't make that all matters in the NFL. Get in the box. It taps the defend. What do you think Jacksonville is going to do? It's a first and 10, I think, situation. So, you know, you end up with a wide open bubble that Fournette just sees pre-snap, and the run is supposed to be totally away to it. He just runs straight into the space. John Davis just stands there. You know, I mean, there's only so much you can expect Davis to do in these spots. He made the tackle. Fournette got 5 untouched yards before anybody touched it. So that's the issue. When you give a guy that big, that much space, the science of him moving fast is good. Yeah, but when Buffalo hit him at the line of scrimmage, Fournette didn't break one tackle in that game. Fournette is he's a good player, but that's it. And the Steelers have made him look amazing both times he's played them.
He's not LeSean McCoy make you miss, Yeah, he's a big, powerful downhill guy.
Right, that's who he is.
Couple things that I wanted to get your opinion on, too. The thing that shocked me the most about that game, well, before I go to there, about an hour before kickoff, I tweeted something like, expect a lot of three-man rushes. Make Bortles hold the ball late in the down. Make him find that eighth defender. I don't think that happened once. It was once. You know, they never tried that routine. I didn't mind a zone-heavy approach, especially if you're going to drop eight and all that. But they never really got out of it either. Like, try to go man against these guys and make Bortles throw into a tight window. I mean, I didn't see a lot of adjustments to man. And the biggest shock I had of the entire day, which is really just Jacksonville playing well and the Steelers not. I didn't think it was a scheme thing. Because when I previewed the game, the thing I thought that favored Pittsburgh more than any other matchup was Steelers D-line versus Jags O-line. In run game and pass game. Because that O-line hasn't been playing well. And they played very well right. In this game. But I thought Hayward, Tuitt, you mentioned Hargrave, that those three would be disruptive. They were invisible. And they lost that battle badly. And to take it one step further to get your opinion on this too, think if you're Belichick. They're not going to blow any coverages. They're not going to screw up their fits. They're going to play man against bad receivers. And I think they might shut him out.
I think that people are going to be...
Last thing I'm going
to
say on that.
Yeah.
I think next week's game, Belichick is going to make the Steelers look even worse.
I agree. You know what I mean? That's exactly what I was going to say. Yep. I really think that. I think people are going to be very surprised by how easily New England defends Jacksonville. Now, I will say this, New England blows them out unless their receivers can't separate from Jacksonville's in man coverage. That's the only way Jacksonville wins the game, which is possible.
It is.
But I still don't know how they match up with Gronkowski. What, is Jalen Ramsey just going to cover Gronkowski? You know, you don't have a great slot corner. I would love to see Miles Jack in that role potentially, but I don't know that they'll do that. Mm-hmm. How they're going to defend him is going to be huge. You know, they asked Marone about it. He jokingly just said, I hope they don't throw to him or he drops every pass. So that's really the only thing you can do. You know, obviously he's kidding, but that really is kind of, you know, I don't see them being able to slow down Gronk. Now, if the Patriots didn't have Gronkowski, I could see Jacksonville's defense making it like Bolton. Remember the Dolphins. They didn't have Gronkowski in that game. The Dolphins matched up in man coverage. Xavier Howard played the game of his life. I don't know if he'd be capable of that week.
Right.
And he locked down Brandon Cooks and
Sue Patriots, and those guys were disruptive up the middle and
And the Patriots didn't really have anybody else get open quickly anyway against man coverage. So that's the key, because they don't have Edelman, who is a great man beater, and they have some lesser guys. I still think it's a pretty capable group, but with Gronkowski in the mix, I don't know whether the Patriots put up points like the Steelers did, because honestly the Steelers I think have more and better weapons, but with Gronkowski in the mix it could be something like 27-6, something
And
not that I don't think Jacksonville can compete. I think people are going to be really surprised. The Buffalo Bills were not a good defense all year. Neither were really the Tennessee Titans. And the last couple games,
they're well coached.
The last couple games of the year, they took away Jacksonville's few strengths, forced them to throw down the field. They couldn't do anything, and you know, they couldn't run the ball because they lowered the line of scrimmage. And there you had it. So I think, yes, you're right. They're going to make the Steelers look a lot worse next week.
It might be 7-0 at halftime, and we're going to be like, wow, the Jags are going to pull off an upset. But the Patriots will figure it out. It's, you know, they're going to get a lot of opportunities. Brady's going to get his eventually. I mean, like I said, that defense is good, and the Steelers made phenomenal plays, you know, Brown and Ben. I mean, I don't know that the Patriots will make those A-plus high degree of difficulty plays like Pittsburgh did, but they'll figure something out. And if Ramsey's on Gronkowski, they'll bring him in tight, and they'll run the ball with power formations. You know, like, they're going to adapt. So, anyway, all right. We've been going a while. Let's talk a little draft. You are heading to the Senior Bowl shortly.
Yes.
And it's an awesome time. I've been down there. You've been down there. It's great. To keep the Steelers-centric just for two more minutes, the biggest needs for the Steelers are inside linebacker and free safety to me. And I don't think Mike Mitchell will be back, and who knows with Shazier. Even if Shazier got a clean bill of health, they need to draft inside linebacker. Hi.
Right.
Give me a handful of names in the top two rounds that Steeler fans should know about.
Yeah, I agree with you on both the top positions. I really think, I know people are going to talk about other positions. They're going to probably talk about corner and running back and quarterback. I expect Bell to get tagged. I think he'll be back next year. I don't buy the retirement talk. I think he'll be back and he'll play. And, you know, Ben's already said he's going to be back. I just don't know. The Steelers aren't going to move up for a quarterback, I don't think. Ben jokes around, what did he say the other day? He wants to play three more years. So, I mean, you just never know with him. I mean, he could play three more years. It wouldn't surprise anybody. He could change his mind and retire tomorrow.
I think that gets bumped to next year's job.
Yeah, so I think it very easily could be that. Could fall to next year. The Steelers really don't have a ton of holes. They don't really lose anybody in free agency as long as Bell's back. Chris Hubbard is a depth piece, but there's really nobody of concern. So it's not like a lot of holes open up per se, but there are some places on the roster that can be improved. Vince Williams is a mildly capable starter maybe, but he can be improved upon. And Shazier, with his career in question, there really can be no doubt about where they have to go with this first pick unless they address it in free agency, which would be surprise me some.
It's a bad group of free agents. I was looking at.
Yeah, it's not right. It's not a great group in that area. So, the good news is that it's a very good group for the draft, I think. From what I've seen so far, I really like the group. It's all about finding out who you want to play what role, because that's what linebackers do nowadays. So for me, I'm looking at three down guys who can run and cover. Shazier was raw coming out too. I don't think that'll scare them off. Bud Dupree was raw. T.J. Watt was raw. Artie Burns was raw. That's not going to matter to the Steelers at all. So sure, they like a guy that's raw and, you know, that has great upside and is refined, but
so
those guys
all
are few and far between when you're picking at 28. Exactly. So some of the guys whose names could be really interesting: Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech. Very athletic.
Roquan Smith's long gone, right?
I think he's long gone. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, he's the pipe dream.
Yeah.
But
right,
maybe
right.
Falls like Reuben Foster or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
off the field. Foster.
I don't think that's going to be a concern. So Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech is a guy that I would have pretty high hopes for. I haven't really sat down and given him a close look yet, but from what I've seen watching him live, I've been really impressed. I liked him a lot last year. I liked him this season. He's rangy. He's very violent and physical as a tackler. Has some similarities to Shazier. He's bigger than Shazier is, but probably, you know, maybe not quite as fast, but still very athletic, downhill type of player. You know, you don't want to see him get hung up on blocks, but I think that he'll eventually developed, and I think he already has somewhat the instincts and the read and react abilities to be able to beat blockers to spots. So he's very intriguing. There's a couple
taller guy.
Yes, he's like 6'4", I think, for Virginia Tech. I think some places have him at 6'5". I think he'll be like 6'4". But he's going to be a guy that people are going to be watching his testing very closely. He came out as a junior.
I heard some Anthony Barr comparisons for him.
There have been some people like him on the edge. I don't really get. I think it's just because he's tall and long. I don't know that there's another reasoning behind that, really, because I don't think he played on the edge at all at Virginia Tech. But I think he's maybe frame he looks like Anthony Barr. But I think he moves a lot better in space than Barr did. But he could be similar. Yeah, maybe he gets used in a versatile way. Steelers like those guys. A guy that I think they'll be interested in that I'm not sure how I feel about just yet is Malik Jefferson from Texas. Mm-hmm. I think Jefferson's going to test well. He can definitely run, and he can definitely rush the passer. I actually think he may be best served as a 3-4 outside linebacker in the NFL, because he's just not great at reading and reacting at Texas. But he was a big recruit, lots of upside. Steelers like Power 5 kids. They like athletes. There's no question about that. They are not going to take a subpar athlete in the first round if they're drafting defensively. I mean, everybody they've drafted has been mint athlete, and I think Jefferson will test
ever since
pretty
Jarvis
close to,
Jones. They're all plus
right.
athletes.
Basically, he changed the whole.
Right.
He was drastic enough to change the whole mindset.
Right. Let's change what we're doing here.
Yeah. So Jefferson, is intriguing to me, but I didn't, his tape is way too hit or miss for me to feel comfortable with him that high. And then the other guy I think that could show up on the radar right now is Rashawn Evans from Alabama. I don't know and can't get a feel for Evans' range in this draft. He had not started until the season at Alabama, except for one game, which was the national championship game. He played behind Reuben Foster and Sean Dion Hamilton. He played situationally as an edge pass rusher for them from a 2-point stance. He played inside linebacker some as well, a lot of long and late downs because he's so athletic. What I wonder about him going into the national championship game was how he was going to fare in that type of a stage. He led the team in tackles in that game. He was all over the field. There were some missed tackles and some bad stuff too. He plays incredibly fast. He's very aggressive. He's very physical. He's probably he's probably going to be the best athlete in the entire linebacker group, I think. And he's just no hesitation to his game whatsoever, you know, and he can cover. So there's the good things with him. Bad things is he misses too many tackles. So again, it's kind of will remind people of Shazier probably. Mm-hmm. He misses too many tackles and he's a little raw in his key and diagnose abilities too. So those are probably the three big names at linebacker that I think could be on the board in that range. And obviously we're really early, so a lot could happen. But there are some guys later in the draft too, for whatever reason, there's a run on linebackers. But that's a position that tends to fall, I think, a decent amount. It's not really highly valued by a lot of teams. I think it should be probably more valued, and I think maybe that's making a comeback a little bit with some of the good linebacker play being key around the league. But you know, I think that those are probably three of the guys that you look out for on the Steelers board.
All right, I need to break a little news for you. It sounds like Finkner's going to be the guy taking over for Haley. No surprise there, right?
Not much of a surprise, yeah. And I think Munchak staying with the Steelers officially. I mean, it kind of was assumed when he didn't take his second. Yeah, didn't take a second interview with Arizona. But both are huge. And if Finkner's the guy, the one thing I think that will definitely change in Pittsburgh, well, I wouldn't say change, but become more, will increase more, is no huddle. I think he'll likely surrender control to Ben Roethlisberger. That is probably some good and some bad because I don't think Ben cares about taking shots. I think he will be aggressive in like every situation. So there may be some pump the reins that need to be applied at some point, but he's also gets in very nice rhythm as a passer, and as does the offense when they run no huddle. So I think that is something that we'll pick up in Pittsburgh.
One other note that Dale Lawley mentioned to me the other day is if Coach Mitchell, the defensive line coach, people don't realize he would be a big loss. But if he retires, which sounds like is possible, then they can make Munchak the assistant head coach, and then it'll be more difficult for teams to pluck him. He'll get a raise. So yep. That might be the next shoe that drops here, you know, that Munchak's staying, he's becoming the assistant head coach, and I would expect that to be something we hear soon.
Yep, I would agree with that. Yeah, he's a guy you want to keep in place for a lot of reasons. He's players awesome. Love him. Yeah, you know, and he might be the best assistant coach in the league. So right. You do whatever you can to keep somebody like that around. And I don't think that's lost on the Steelers. I think you're right. I think you'll see some type of promotion for him.
All right. And I know we're going long. I knew we would. Give me a handful of deep safeties. And do you have any thought that Sean Davis could be a free safety? I don't know what he is, but I don't trust him mentally.
Yeah, no, I would not. I think athletically, yes, but I don't think he has that kind of reactionary abilities and be able to key and diagnose and read things. And I just don't think he's that type of a player. Again, he is kind of a little bit of a misfit because I think the Steelers really wanted him to be able to play against guys like Gronkowski and match up in man coverage against right. Some of the bigger guys that they faced, the Kelseys, the Gronks. They had trouble with tight ends for so long.
I exactly think that's why he was drafted.
Right.
You have Tyler Eifert. You have Gronk. You know.
Right. And he can't do that, so
it's
kind of a bad spot to be in. he's okay. He's okay against the run. I mean, he's just inconsistent. When he makes good plays, they're really good. He's still very much learning. I think they need to bring in competition for him. You said you think Mike Mitchell will be gone. I think there's a chance of that. I also wouldn't be surprised if he's back, but I definitely think there's competition coming in either way at safety. I really think the first pick is going to be safety or linebacker. This is pre-free agency, obviously, so we'll see what happens. But I really think it's going to be one of those two spots. I think there's a decent chance there's players on the board available. The problem is I don't really love the safety class. Of the seniors, good luck, man. I am not really high on any of the guys that I've seen so far. Now, there's a lot of box types. You know, there's some guys that will be decent near the line of scrimmage. At the Senior Bowl, you'll have guys like Quinn Blanding and Marcus Allen and some guys like that. Armani Watts is probably the most enticing coverage option maybe from Texas A&M of the seniors anyway. But again, there's up and down play with him. I don't know what you're getting there. What will the Steelers' philosophy be too? You know, what kind of changes? Will there be changes? Will they need a single high safety as often? Because there is more man coverage coming, it looks like. And so maybe, you know, they don't opt to go, you know, with a single high safety. Maybe they're playing more cover two, or they're mixing things up, or, you know, maybe they rotate guys. So Ronnie Harrison from Alabama is a really good athlete who plays near the line of scrimmage, a bigger safety.
That's a name you hear the most.
Yeah, I think he could play in a deeper role and be okay. He just doesn't do it a lot at Alabama athletically anyway. It's hard to project those kind of guys. Enticing names are Jordan Whitehead from Pitt, who would be obviously a local choice. Very athletic, has single high traits, would probably be the most enticing guy in terms of a skill set that would be improved on what Mike Mitchell brings to the table in that same exact role. The issues are Whitehead's had some concerns off the field, and he's a little inconsistent right now. So he would fit with the whole athletic but high variance type of mantra that the Steelers run defensively right now. So he's probably the best fit in terms of that, but they're just really, I've seen a little bit of Justin Reed from Stanford. He could be a guy that grows on me. I expect Derwin James will be gone at that point. He really didn't play single high anyway. He played near the box. I don't really get the whole excitement with him, but I think people are excited about his potential like they were with Jabril Peppers. But I haven't really seen anybody that's caught my eye that would be a great option in a specific role like the Steelers have that would be an improvement on Mitchell. You know, Mitchell, the knock on him, he doesn't make any plays on the ball. And that's
he was invisible all year.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he does a lot of the little things right, and he's very technical and where he should be and things like that, but he's not going to make any plays for you. And the Steelers need more playmakers defensively.
Maybe they do a LaMarcus Joyner, a Kenny Vaccaro, an Eric Reed, but they don't have a lot to spend. So I don't know that that's in the cards either.
But none of those guys are a Mitchell type single high.
No, right.
Oh, I love Joyner.
I like Joyner a lot, but yeah, you're right. I mean, that true center fielder is, I haven't heard one name. You're like, oh, that's the one.
Right.
In draft or free agency. All right. I'm going to let you go here real soon, but give me a handful of the absolute top guys at the Senior Bowl. I know you touched on some of the linebackers and safeties who are early picks.
Baker Mayfield's going to be, I think he's going to be a top 15 pick at quarterback. So, I mean, to have a guy like that of that pedigree at the Senior Bowl, Josh Allen has a chance to go high. I don't see it. I think he's like a late day two, early day three risk type pick, but teams are going to fall in love with the tools and he's going to get drafted high. Not a
this
great
will be a good
back.
Forum for him too.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. He'll be able to show off some things. I think the running back group is solid, but I don't know that there's any high picks in there. Royce Freeman is a zone runner in the NFL. Could be a lot, could be similar to a Jordan Howard like impact. Maybe not break as many tackles. Okay. Very, very smart runner. I really like him.
The better wide in the receivers, passing game, though, right?
Right. And more, okay. Yes, more touches in the passing game, which could mean he sees the field more and you don't have to worry about putting him in certain packages, which is huge, actually, for offensive coordinators. Wide receivers, James Washington is going to have a big platform to prove himself on. What kind of an athlete is going to be the question. That offense makes a lot of offensive players look really good, and then you get to the NFL and you have to run a more advanced route tree and separate from man coverage and get off press. So how he does all those things will be key. I really like Anthony Miller from Memphis. Great route runner. He's very nuanced in his approach. He's a smaller receiver, but he wins big, like a lot of smaller. You know, he's going to draw some similarities to Antonio Brown. He's not Antonio Brown, but he's going to draw similarities stylistically to Brown. Guys that I like in the tight end group, not many, to be honest. Some people like Dallas Goedert, Troy Fumagalli, Mike Gesicki. I'm not really crazy about any of those guys. I think Durham Smythe from Notre Dame could be the guy to watch. He could be the surprise guy. I haven't really gotten to the offensive line in depth yet, but Chukwuma Okorafor is the guy getting first-round buzz right now from Western Michigan. His tape was okay last year. I thought it was solid. I could see somebody reaching for his tools. Will Hernandez.
He's an upside guy, huh?
He is. He's kind of an upside guy, yeah. I think his feet are a little clunky, but he's got really long arms. You know how the NFL loves long arms, and so he could be an issue. Alex Kappa from Humboldt State. I've heard some really good things about him. On his tape at Humboldt State, he put like every single person he faced on the ground. He is really nasty. So does he bring that to better competition? That's what we'll be looking to see. Will Hernandez, the guard from UTEP, he's probably the most high-profile, the interior offensive lineman that are going to be there. But I really like Mason Cole from Michigan. He played center last year, kicked out to left tackle this past year for Michigan. And he's not going to be a tackle. He's going to be an interior guy in the NFL. But I think the versatility of him being able to play both and be really technically sound is going to be really interesting to teams. Maurice Hurst from the interior defensive line is probably your top guy, maybe in the entire Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
He's very good, good. I think he has top 10, top 15 type potential, explosive. How's his block recognition? Because he just shot gaps at Michigan. Their whole defense is shooting gaps, get upfield, be aggressive. So maybe if he has to slow play things in the NFL, you know, how does he read and recognize and attack blocks one-on-one? I saw good flashes from him. I think he'll really prove himself. The edge rusher,
but
group,
as a rookie, he should help as an interior pass rusher immediately, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. See, so, not many defensive linemen coming from college football, yeah, that have refined pass rush plans and moves like Maurice Terce does. So that's huge. I think he'll be a really impact player at the next level. Edge rusher group isn't great. Harold Landry's a speed bend guy. He's going to draw some similarities to Vic Beasley in his style. I don't know that he's quite as athletic as Beasley. Does he have any counter moves? That'll be the big question to watch with him. I also like Ogbonnia Okoronkwo from Oklahoma. He's probably going to get some looks off the ball as well, maybe a little versatile type of player. At linebacker, Rashawn Evans is your top guy. I talked about him already. Guy to watch for me, Dorian O'Daniel from Clemson. He's a redshirt senior, played some last year, played a lot this year, really proved himself a very talented player and can cover and can run. So I think there's going to be a role for him in the NFL. Cornerback group is a ton of small school guys, tons of them. But Levi, so I haven't seen a lot of those guys. Levi Wallace from Alabama is a kid that I've really gotten high on, and Anthony Averett from Alabama as well. Averett might be an inside corner in the NFL. Wallace has to run well probably to be an outside corner, but he has the length. You want to play him on the outside, and he really competes at the catch point too. Duke Dawson's a nickel from Florida. I think he's really refined, probably a day two, early day three type pick, but could start like Brian Poole did from Florida a couple years ago. I talked about the safety group not really being great. I want to see Jeremy Reeves from South Alabama. I didn't watch him at all yet, and I want to see Trayvon Henderson from Hawaii. Haven't seen anything of those guys. The rest of the group is mainly box safeties. I think you can find those guys. Not really a lot of high value there, so I want to see the South Alabama kid and the Hawaii kid. So there's your little rundown of Senior Bowl position groups and who to watch.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, I'm sure you're going to have a blast. I'm jealous. I wish I was there. I wish I was still covering the Steelers past this week as well. But I got to run because I got to show my Wednesday show with Benz and Wolf for Steelers Nation Radio. So we got to wrap this up. John, what's your Twitter handle? I'm sure most of those guys everyone should be following you if they aren't already.
Yeah, at Ledyard NFL Draft. Yeah, talk a lot of NFL draft, a lot of Steelers, a lot of NFL in general, actually. I'm not refined to any one thing. So
sure.
If it's football related, I'm usually talking about it.
Right. And for all you guys that aren't Steelers fans, you definitely have to check out Locked On NFL Draft for sure. 'Tis the season. All right. Over and out. And tomorrow will be Twitter Thursday, everyone.